Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Is Democracy Now!
The Trump administration just launched a direct attack on our union. A new executive order that tries to illegally strip collective bargaining rights from hundreds and thousands of federal workers.
Unions are calling President Trump's move to strip federal workers of collective bargaining rights the biggest attack on the labor movement in U.S. history. We'll speak with AFGE Union President Everett Kelly, head of the largest federal workers union, which is also spearheading resistance to cuts to federal agencies. And we'll get an update on a major labor victory as the Chicago Teachers Union reaches a tentative contract with Chicago Public Schools after more than a year of negotiations without a strike. Then to Burma, where aid groups say there's still an urgent need for rescue, shelter, food, and water after Friday's massive earthquake.
Hello, somebody there? We are stuck in here. Please help us. I beg you, please pull us out.
And finally, we look at the alarming rise in censorship on U.S. campuses and how New York University canceled a presentation by the former international head of Doctors Without Borders.
They were a little bit taken aback by my presentation. They were actually concerned that, especially one slide, when I'm talking about casualty into humanitarian aid force last year in 2024, that they were mentioning that some of those casualties were happening in Gaza. And then as well, they were worried about the fact I was talking about USAID cuts.
Speak with Professor Dr. Joanne Liu in Montreal, Canada, about what she'd hoped to cover in her NYU address. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's armies ordered the mass expulsion of Palestinians from some of the Gaza Strip's most populated areas, including the southern city of Rafah and parts of Khan Yunis. The order's uprooting hundreds of thousands of people who've previously had to flee Israel's repeated forced evacuation orders and bombings. This comes amid stepped-up Israeli attacks that, according to Gaza's health ministry, killed at least 42 people and injured over 180 people in just the last 24 hours.
There are bombings, there are missiles, and there are projectiles, but there are no means of transportation to leave. We prepared our things but had no means to transport them. We walked. We walked to protect our children's souls. We wanted to take our children and leave with them, not caring about the house or anything. The crossing is closed, and life, do you know, life is hell. Hell, hell, hell. You know, the Gaza Strip is no longer fit for the living. That's true.
Israel's military has assassinated another journalist in Gaza, at least the 209th Palestinian media worker killed since October 2023. Radio journalist Mohammed al-Bardawi was killed along with his wife and their three children in Israeli strike on their home in Khan Yunis just before dawn. In Lebanon, at least four people were killed, seven others wounded overnight when Israel attacked a southern suburb of the capital, Beirut. The airstrike reportedly came without warning. It was the second such attack in less than a week and came despite a ceasefire agreement Israel signed with Hezbollah in November. In Jerusalem, Israeli police arrested a dozen protesters Monday as thousands marched, calling for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to resign, accusing him of sabotaging the release of remaining hostages held in Gaza and subverting efforts at a ceasefire.
The government has decided to go into holiday, the parliament, while we're still in a war. There's still bad situation going on. The hostages are still in Gaza. And this is an absurd situation, and we want it to end. We're also here to call for elections. We don't trust this government. Most of the people don't trust this government, and it has no more authority to rule.
The continuing protests came as Israeli police arrested two of Netanyahu's top aides, Yonatan Urich and Eli Feldstein, charging them with accepting bribes from Qatar and then laundering the money. On Monday, Netanyahu's separate corruption trial was interrupted when he was summoned to testify in his aides' case. A dual citizen of the United Kingdom and the Gambia, who was twice suspended for joining pro-Palestinian and anti-genocide campus protests at Cornell University, has left the United States following ongoing threats of deportation by the Trump administration. Mamadou Tal explained his decision to leave, writing on social media, quote, "The repression of Palestinian solidarity is now being used to wage a wholesale attack on any form of expression that challenges oppressive and exploitative relations in the U.S. For every person that's remained silent, just know that you are not safe either. Is the imprisonment of those who speak against a genocide a reflection of your values? Is this the kind of nation you want to live in?" he asked. To see our interviews with Mamadou Tal when he was in Ithaca and outside, visit our website at democracynow.org. Meanwhile, several alumni from Columbia University's School of International and Public Affairs, SIPA, have publicly ripped up their diplomas to protest the Trump administration's jailing of Mahmoud Khalil, the Palestinian Columbia graduate student protest leader who was abducted by ICE and flown to an immigration jail in Louisiana. Even though he's a permanent U.S. resident, he had a green card. Protesters accused Columbia's administration of putting collaboration with federal agencies ahead of protecting students and their rights to free speech.
Columbia loves to celebrate its Vietnam-era legacy. It loves to talk about how brave students were for protesting. But why was it courageous then and criminalized now?
Columbia's vicious crackdown on protest, its attempts to silence pro-Palestinian students and faculty, has helped pave the way for the American fascism we see unfolding around us.
The Trump administration's launched an investigation into Harvard University, threatening to cut off more than $9 billion in federal grants and contracts over the school's response to student-led protests in solidarity with Gaza. A federal anti-Semitism task force is expected to visit the Harvard campus soon. A scathing op-ed in the Harvard Crimson student newspaper condemns the response of Harvard administrators as shameful, adding, quote, "Students are being hurt, threatened, and snatched off the street in real time, as our administrators, whose primary responsibility should be defending the well-being of students, stay silent, leaving students to feel that they must fend for themselves," the op-ed read. Last week, the Harvard chapter of the American Association of University Professors joined a lawsuit against the Trump administration over its deportation of international students on ideological grounds. Meanwhile, 70% of Harvard Law School professors have signed a letter condemning the Trump administration for attacking law firms that represent causes and clients opposed by the Trump administration. President Trump on Sunday threatened to bomb Iran unless it reaches a new agreement with the U.S. over its nuclear program. Trump's threat comes even though he unilaterally withdrew the U.S. from the Iran nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA, in 2018. On Sunday, the Iranian president, Masoud Pezeshkian, ruled out direct talks with the United States, but said Iran remained open to indirect negotiations. Meanwhile, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, promised a punishing response to any U.S. attack.
The enmity from the U.S. and Israel has always been there. They threaten to attack us, which we don't think is very probable. But if they commit any mischief, they will surely receive a strong reciprocal blow.
China staged large-scale military drills Tuesday off the coast Taiwan, surrounding the island with land, air, and sea forces, and what the Chinese Foreign Ministry called a stern warning against Taiwanese independence. As it launched the war games, China's Eastern Theater Command called the Taiwanese president a parasite and released a video depicting him as an insect held by chopsticks over a burning Taiwan. Earlier today, China's Foreign Ministry called Taiwan's eventual reunification with China an unstoppable historical trend.
The Democratic Progressive Party authorities stubbornly adhere to a separatist stance on Taiwan independence, an attempt to seek independence by relying on external forces. Such efforts are doomed to failure, as they are like a mantis trying to stop a chariot. China's reunification is an unstoppable historical trend. It will happen, and it must happen.
China's military drills come after U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth wrapped up his first official visit to Asia Sunday with reassurances to Japan that President Trump is seeking to boost military cooperation with its allies in the region to counter China's power. On Capitol Hill, New Jersey Democratic Senator Cory Booker is continuing a marathon speech from the Senate floor, warning the U.S. faces a crisis over President Trump's disregard for the rule of law and his efforts to dismantle entire government programs and agencies. Booker's all-night filibuster came after the State Department formally notified Congress it's dissolving the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID. Also on Monday, the Trump administration announced it would place the entire staff of the Institute of Museum and Library Services on administrative leave. The independent federal agency provides grants to libraries and museums across the United States. Meanwhile, EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin's ordered the closure of the National Environmental Museum at the EPA's headquarters in Washington, D.C. A federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration's efforts to end deportation relief and work permits for hundreds of thousands of Venezuelan immigrants with temporary protected status. Approximately 350,000 Venezuelans with TPS could have faced mass deportation by early April, but the decision will allow them to stay in the United States while the measure's challenged in court. In his ruling, San Francisco federal judge Edward Chen said Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem's move to terminate TPS for Venezuelans would, quote, inflict irreparable harm on hundreds of thousands of persons whose lives, families, and livelihoods will be severely disrupted, cost the United States billions in economic activity, and injure public health and safety in communities throughout the United States, the judge said. In related news, the Trump administration's transferred another group of immigrants to a supermax mega prison complex in El Salvador, the second such removal from the U.S. in 2 weeks. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said Monday 17 immigrants from Venezuela and El Salvador accused of being gang members have been sent to Salvadoran mega prison Sunday after previously being detained at Guantanamo Bay Naval Base in Cuba. Hundreds of immigrants and asylum seekers have been expelled to El Salvador without due process, with many accused of belonging to gangs largely on the basis of having tattoos. One Venezuelan asylum seeker currently languishing in the Salvadoran supermax prison was detained and removed for tattoos on each forearm, one that read Mom and one that read Dad. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has admitted in a court filing that a Maryland father from El Salvador with protected status was among the hundreds of immigrants who were transferred to El Salvador's mega prison complex earlier this month. Kilmer Armando Abrego Garcia, who lived in Maryland with his family, was granted protected status in 2019, prohibiting the federal government from sending him back to El Salvador after he fled gang violence. The Trump administration said Garcia was removed to El Salvador, quote, because of an administrative error, but that it could not bring him back to the U.S. because he's now in Salvador's custody. And people around the world marked International Transgender Day of Visibility Monday. Here in the U.S., thousands gathered nationwide as trans and non-binary communities fight back against repeated attacks by the Trump administration. This is 17-year-old Lorelei Crean.
They are trying to criminalize our existence. You see that with even on Trump's first day in office. He passed an executive order declaring that there's only male and female and eliminating the option of X gender markers on passports. That was a direct attempt to erase trans people. Then you saw it with his ban on gender-affirming care for people under 19. That's, again, trying to erase the existence of trans people by denying them life-saving health care. We see over and over again that the Trump administration is targeting trans people in order to attempt to erase us. And that's why we are showing up, to show them that this is not going to happen, that we are visible, showing our visibility that he is not going to erase us, no matter how hard he tries.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show with President Trump's push to end collective bargaining rights for federal workers that have helped to lead the resistance to cuts by billionaire Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency, by signing up thousands of new members joining protests and by filing many lawsuits. On Monday, the National Treasury Employees Union, which represents workers in 37 federal agencies, sued the Trump administration over an executive order Trump signed Thursday night that calls the unions hostile to his agenda and could block collective bargaining rights for nearly half the federal workforce and overturn the ability of unions to represent them in negotiations or in court. Unions have called Trump's order the biggest attack on the labor movement in U.S. history. The largest federal employee union, the American Federation of Government Employees, says it will also challenge the order in court. This comes after a federal judge recently ruled in favor of AFGE and its allies in another case, ordering the Trump administration to reinstate federal probationary workers fired at six agencies. Meanwhile, another round of layoffs for federal workers is underway this morning, this time for as many as 10,000 workers at the Health and Human Services Department. For more, we go directly to Washington, D.C., where we're joined by Everett Kelly, president of the American Federation of Government Employees. To say the least, Everett Kelly, your union is under attack. Talk about President Trump's executive order and how you're fighting back.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for having me here today. You know, as you know, this executive order uses national security for the actions. However, we know this is just pretext, not justification, because it's no way that you've had employees such as nurses and doctors and scientists, you know, in a collective bargaining agreement for decades. And all of a sudden now they are not able to be in an agreement. You know, that's strictly pretextual and has nothing to do with national security. And this is the thing that. Go ahead, Juan.
No, go ahead.
You know, I was just going to say this is nothing but retaliation against our union for standing up for its members. But this is our job. This is what we should do, is stand up for our members, because, you know, it's been proven that what this administration is trying to do to federal employees is illegal. You know, and we will continue to fight for the membership. We will continue to fight for America, and we will continue to fight for democracy. That's our job. And we are outraged by this.
Could you talk about to what extent is this historic, these attacks on federal workers? How does this compare to what other administrations have done in the past in terms of the federal workforce?
You know, again, this is, you know, this workforce was under the first Trump administration. He didn't think that was a need at that time when you had a pandemic going on, when you had crisis in the world. You know, he didn't think there was a need to place these employees under this national security threat. You know, and that's exactly what it is. It's designed to silence workers. It's designed to make sure that employees keep their head down and don't say anything, don't hold anyone accountable, because for decades, these employees have been under contract. It's never been a problem. Like I said, even under the Trump first administration, it wasn't a problem. And all of a sudden, it's a problem. Why? Because we've been winning in court. We've been challenging this administration, and we will continue to challenge this administration. What they don't understand is this. AFGE is here to represent the members. We will be here. We was here before this administration came on board. We'll be here after it leaves. That's the thing that they hadn't understood about AFGE.
Well, since 1978, with the Civil Service Reform Act, all federal workplaces are considered open shops, which means the workers are not required to pay union dues. Can you talk about what's been happening in recent months in terms of federal employees deciding to pay up union dues?
Well, you know, and that's true. You know, this is an open shop. No one is required to pay union dues. When people join this union, they voluntarily join. And over the past few months, People have been noticing the attack on federal employees. They're realizing the need for a union, and people are joining this union. I mean, it's been massive amounts of employees that have decided, you know what, I want to be a part of this union because they see that the union is standing there, you know, in the way. Matter of fact, you know, I just believe this, that if we don't stand, the very democracy of this country will soon be gone. And people realize that. Employees realize that. And so they are now saying, you know what, I want to be a part of this union because this union is standing for America.
Everett Kelly, I'm wondering if you can respond to the federal judge ruling in favor of your union, the AFGE, ordering the Trump administration to reinstate federal probationary workers. Can you explain what kind of union protection probationary workers have? And let's be clear, there's different kinds of probationary workers. You've got the workers who've maybe just come on board in the last year or two, and you've got the longtime workers who get a promotion. And so then they're in a period of probation. So they could be there for 20 years. They get elevated, and suddenly they're fired.
Yeah, you know, this is unheard of. First of all, you know, to be a probationary employee is just like you said. You know, it could be a person that just been doing such an amazing job that they got a promotion and they've been on that promotion for 90 days or they've been on that promotion for a year. And, you know, this administration come in and said, because you're a probationary employee, you're fired. Right. But this is the thing they need to understand. They're not on probation. They're on a probationary appointment. You know, and this administration was wrong. The court admits that they were wrong. The court showed that they were wrong. And, you know, we are going to continue to make sure that we point out these irregularities and these illegal actions that this administration is taking against federal employees. These probationary employees was very vulnerable because a lot of them have very few rights. This administration knew that. And so they came after them. But AFGE stood up for them. AFGE is going to continue to stand up for any employee that is wrongfully terminated.
I wanted to ask you, Doge and the Trump administration have pushed this reasoning for their aggressive dismantling of federal services. The federal government is too big. Can you talk about this issue that they claim that there's too many people working, especially since the biggest employer is the Defense Department in terms of civilian employees?
Again, you know, it's just pretextual. It is a way of turning people's attention away from the real issue, because when you look at the facts, the population has exploded since 1970. But the federal workforce is the same today as it was in 1970, in the 70s. So that is just pretextual. That is not true. You know, and certainly, you know, this workforce is needed. The services that is provided to the American people, these are the people that do that. These are the workers. These are nurses that provide the services for the veterans that need assistance. These are the people that provide the services for the food inspection to make sure that the food we eat is safe, the air we breathe in EPA is safe. These are the people that make sure that the public fly safely. That's under attack. You know, so this is just pretextual. It is not that the government is too large. You know, these are people that are trying to take over the government and give contracts to the big enough buddies. That's the real issue here.
Everett Kelly, as we begin to wrap up, there are protests at every level. You've got, as we speak, New Jersey Senator Booker on the floor of the Senate filibustering. You've got lawsuits like yours and those all over the country, and you've got people in the streets. You're going to be speaking at the April 5th mass mobilization on Saturday at the hands-off rally organized by Indivisible, where there, I think, around the country, there are going to be something like 800 rallies protesting Trump and Elon Musk's what they're calling a power grab. Can you talk about, give us a little preview about what you're going to say?
Well, first of all, you know, we want to point out the facts. You know, we want the American people to know that what's happening here is not what's being said by the administration. What's happening is that there is a power grab because this is about power. This is about an administration wanting to have their way regardless of the rule of law. You know, and it's so full of lawlessness, and we're trying to point that out to the American people. We're also trying to make the point that, you know, if you continue to reach and grab the federal workforce and disallow them to do their job, it's going to affect the services that have been provided to the American people. Because, you know, the federal workforce do their job so well, in my opinion, that many times they're unnoticed. When the veteran get the services that he or she needs, you know, that veteran worker that's doing that work is unnoticed. When the food that we eat is inspected and people are not getting sick by that, that food inspector's job is really unnoticed. When the America fly safely, you know, the workers at TSA, it's really unnoticed. When the air we breathe is good, that worker is really unnoticed. So they're doing that job and they're doing it effectively. But the minute that they're not able to do that job and they are downsizing these positions, then the American people are going to feel that. And it's going to be dangerous and detrimental to the health and well-being of Americans. You know, so that's why we are making this rally known. That's why we're asking people to participate nationwide. Like you said, we're looking at over 800 of these events. And I appreciate this Indivisible for doing what they're doing to bring some awareness to what's happening across this country.
Everett Kelly, we want to thank you very much for being with us. President of the American Federation of Government Employees, the largest government worker union in the country. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago, where we're going to stay. Because in a major labor victory, the Chicago Teachers Union has reached a tentative contract deal with Chicago Public Schools after more than a year of negotiations without a strike or threat of a strike for the first time in more than a decade. The full membership still has to vote before everything is final. The deal reaffirms sanctuary school protections, protects the ability to teach Black history, and includes raises for veteran teachers and more. This comes amidst attacks on public education by the Trump administration, as well as concerns about ICE agents targeting Chicago schools. For more, we're joined in Chicago by Stacey Davis Gates, president of the Chicago Teachers Union, also wrote the afterword to the new posthumous memoir by the former Chicago Teachers Union president, Karen Lewis, titled, I Didn't Come Here to Lie, My Life in Education. It also has a foreword by the world-renowned abolitionist, author, and activist, Professor Angela Davis. Stacey Davis Gates, welcome back to Democracy Now! Explain the contract victory you almost have secured.
Good morning. Thank you for having me again. This contract provides us with the capacity to move our school district forward in a time of Trump. As you noted earlier, the destruction of the Department of Education is going to have profound impact on the least of these. This contract provides a force field of protection for both our LGBTQIA plus students and our members. It provides academic freedom to ensure that history teachers like me are able to teach about the power of Reconstruction in this country, led by enslaved Africans and the first profound general strike that this country experienced. Beyond that, this contract is a way in which our immigrant students and their families can find safety in sending their children to schools where we will protect them as we have already. The collective bargaining agreement is a very powerful tool to use, especially in this moment, to ensure that people are protected, to ensure that their ability to enjoy the public good has some guardrails on it.
And Stacey Davis Gates, could you talk about some of the other proposals you were able to win, including more funding for sports programs and sustainable community schools?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. Dyett High School in the Washington Park neighborhood of Chicago was closed by Rahm Emanuel, who was the mayor of Chicago. In fact, he closed over 50 schools at one time in this city. We in coalition with the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization, teachers and grandmothers and order people like Jeanette Taylor, they went on a hunger strike. And in that hunger strike, they won the reopening of their schools. Our union then, in coalition with this community coalition, took their needs to the bargaining table and established community schools. We have expanded the number of community schools as an effort to support and structure spaces that don't have to close but provide opportunity. This year, Dyett's boys basketball team is celebrating